Well, have you looked at Nutter Butter on TikTok?
No. What's the deal with Nutter Butter?
Go look up at Nutter Butter on TikTok. I'm not joking. Go look at them right now. It is the most fucking insane thing you will ever see in your life.
Is it just unhinged?
Like, you're in the middle of a fucking acid trip watching their stuff.
Oh, I love it.
One also, like, that's what I love about, you know, like, I mean, who is it? Wendy's and, I mean, like,
yeah,
some
the Wendy's, the, yeah, when they respond back.
They are savage on, like, on Twitter or X, you know, like, they say, but it's amazing.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Thank you. Ethan and Cass didn't build Taste Events by climbing a conventional trade show ladder. They fell into the food service industry the same way a lot of the best people do. They met the right people, enjoyed the work, and couldn't imagine walking away. Together, they co-founded Taste Events, a curated B2B food service event company that reverse engineers the trade show model, using real data and intentional buyer-supplier matchmaking to replace the chaos of a general show floor with high value, high trust conversations. Ethan, Cass, welcome dudes to the show.
Thanks, hey, honored to be here. Appreciate
all right,
it.
Let's jump into it. You both described you fell into the industry, right place, right time, met the right people, but that's just, you know, one version of the story and how people actually get into it. What made you keep going deeper instead of just staying with what you were doing in the industry?
Yeah, I think as with most people, when they talk about the industry, it's always the people. So I'll probably be an echo chamber on that the whole day. It's the people, you know. I think Ethan and I felt kind of collectively, if we went and did something else in a different industry, we'd be letting people down and you know, missing that interaction with them.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, beyond the people is, I mean, food's a part of everyone's lives, and I mean, it was a central part of, you know, my life. I wouldn't necessarily consider myself a foodie or a culinary expert or anything, but you know, once I kind of found food service, just seeing how it played into, you know, like the real world, and seeing how it actually kind of influenced so many aspects of, you know, on the chain side, you know, things that people love and brands that people love. So being able to be a part of that really kind of sucked me in, and really enjoyed kind of being on the backside of that and having not necessarily direct influence, but being a part of that bigger, you know, story in the food industry.
Okay. Taste Events seems like a simple name. What was it easy to come up with? What was the final decision to be like, all right, we're going to call it Taste Events?
You know, I feel like we workshopped it for a while, and, you know, having a generic name that fits into it kind of fit, but it really came down to trying to have, I mean, I was just thinking everyone has their form of taste, a taste. We have our form of taste in how we do events, I feel like, and it's kind of a personality. So, you know, beyond it being relevant to food, I feel like it's relevant to, you know, almost any industry, and it just sounded good. I think we just landed on that where we wanted people to say, like, I'm going to taste.
It makes it sound like, yeah, you're going to go to some crazy experience and try some incredible stuff, which in theory, they really are, you know what I mean? Maybe, I guess, you guys had been doing this, you know, you've been doing event service type stuff, but when did you say, you know what, this isn't being done right, or I think we can really nail this? What were the things that you said, you know, we're going to do this better? And then maybe even before that, what is taste? Like, let's go through what an event is, and we'll dig in from there.
Yeah, you know, I guess just to give some context for everyone, you know, I think we were all just in Chicago for National Restaurant Association show. I assume most people listening to this have probably been there. So we wanted to take, you know, that and kind of flip it on its head a little bit, or maybe that's not the right way to put it. Maybe it's more like focus it. Taste really only plays in right now with our menu innovation summits, a very small portion of the industry overall. So, you know, the operators that come to our events right now are chain accounts, and they have to be, you know, on the larger side. And then in turn, that makes that, you know, our suppliers also have to be on, somewhat larger side. Like they have to be able to supply those larger chain accounts. So those are the only people that are at our events. So you don't have the thousands and thousands of people like you would have at a trade show. It's usually about 150 to 200 people. It's only team members from those two sides that I just mentioned. We bring everybody together in, I would say, a more desirable location. Usually we're, you know, in nice resorts where people actually want to spend some time. What we do is facilitate one-on-one menu application pairings, or MAP meetings as we call them, where the manufacturers and the operators can get together and see how it makes sense for them to collaborate. So it's really all focused on, you know, not necessarily like, hey, these are the SKUs that I have. Won't you buy some from me? It's more focused on, you know, what are you working on in your menu? How can we help you solve some of the problems in your sourcing or in your operations or things like that to help make your menu better? And so, you know, that's kind of a long way of describing, you know, what the gist of a taste event is.
Yeah, but it's more than just speed dating, right? Where you're sitting in a room. Like, you got to really dig into, like, what you guys are doing between, like, the background that you dig in on what, you know, a supplier could offer a customer, what kind of cooking goes on. These are really intense meetings. And I mean that in, like, shit gets done. So maybe talk about what the supplier actually does for kind of that customer to really show, like, here's how we could benefit and or both sides could actually benefit from each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do a ton of work ahead of time. So everything at the experience is very curated. When operators sign up to attend, we do about an hour-long call with their team to just understand their business, what they're working on, what parts of the menu are they looking at optimizing or revamping, what are their back-of-house capabilities from their, you know, what's in their kitchens to what their, you know, what their staff can handle as far as culinary capabilities. You know, we want to know what types of flavor profiles they're looking for, what types of form factors they might be interested in. So we really gather a lot of information on each of the operators, and we take that and we create our intelligence dossier, as we call it, where we put all that together for all the 20 plus operators that are attending. And we send that out to all of our supplier partners so that they can really understand what each operator, you know, is looking for, what problems they are trying to solve. And then they can work with us as well as the operators to make a custom meeting schedule for everyone. So it's like you said, it's not speed dating. It's not a round robin where you meet everybody. You're only really going to meetings that are high value for both sides, where, you know, you think there's a solution to something that you're working on. So, you know, you get 10 of those individual meetings. So again, like I mentioned, there's 20 plus operators. You can see you're only meeting with about half of the operators in attendance. The operators are only meeting with about half of the manufacturers in attendance. And it's just a way of making sure that it's time well spent for everyone.
Yeah. And I will say that what we are providing in that intelligence dossier, there's tons of great quantitative data out there. And that's why we have good partnerships with that, you know, consumer insights and things like that. But that's really quantitative. We have that. What we're pulling together is this qualitative data. It's straight from the source. It's straight from who you're going to be meeting with. So it's I find that to be really valuable because, you know, it helps you build that relationship because you can actually listen to what, you know, someone in culinary, someone in marketing, and someone in supply chain, what they're individually looking for, and tie that into how you're actually going to present your product or yourself as a partner in the best way possible. So I think, yeah, it's really having that qualitative side of things that's very helpful, especially going into these meetings. Because, you know, people are getting badgered all the time with, like, there's always a new product, there's always a new SKU, there's always something there. But when you're sitting down in a meeting, really, really having a supplier or somebody that could be a potential partner truly listen to what, you know, top down you're being told to move into the direction of, it's good to be heard on that from a chef standpoint or marketing or supply chain.
And talk about the extracurriculars because it's, yes, magic happens in those rooms. You get the nitty gritty. I've been to some of these type events where the extracurricular is kind of really where things happen, where free flowing conversations can happen. Those late night unlike, you know, typical trade show where it's, I hate to say it, it's, you know, the boys get together and shoot the shit and drink, but how much business gets done? Probably not a whole lot. Whereas at this, with the extracurriculars that happen, there's a lot of magic and a lot of things that happen. So maybe talk about some of the things you guys do outside of just the meetings that make this even more than just a partnering type event.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of comes down to the space. You know, once again, the meetings are like the meat of the event, but we choose to host them in areas that are very gorgeous, and they allow you to kind of slow down and get out of the race. And so some of those like extracurriculars, you know, having them in that area where you can, you know, spend time outside, whether it's an outdoor activity, you know, with someone that you work with or someone that you don't know, getting out into the outdoors is something that, you know, we've always kind of integrated around the event. It's definitely not part of our agenda fully now, but it's kind of encased around it. But then I will say we've added on our first night, we call it the taste tour, but it's essentially like a dine around block party, which is my favorite part of the event, which once again, we've talked about how you have those 10 meetings with your most relevant like things. However, it's still great to be able to, you don't know what you don't know. So it gives you a chance to be able to actually see all of the suppliers and operators that are at that event. But kind of getting back to that kind of dine around block party, it's just another really casual, fun way to interact. You're basically hosting a dinner party or hosting a small gathering, you know, in a way it feels like with your friends, but it gives a very calm but fun environment to meet people. It's less of like introductions, you know, so I think like that's an extracurricular aspect of the event. It is part of the agenda. But then on top of that, you know, the dinners that we host, we like to have them outside. We like to have them, I guess, just in beautiful locations so that it's, I don't know, it's more entertaining and more conducive to building relationships, I would say.
And about the dinners too, is like everybody, I mentioned there's only, you know, 150 to 200 people there. So you're not like wading through a sea of people trying to find somebody that you, you know, want to talk to. You can actually meet everybody that's in attendance. So those dinners, keeping everybody together and offering more space and time to cement relationships or connect with people maybe that you don't have the one-on-one meetings with is super important.
The last event that you went to, Jeff, I feel like that it's been a while, but you know, the outdoors and activities were a central part of those events. We have like axed that from the actual agenda at our events. So it's kind of something that you would do earlier or after the event, but we've somewhat built it into there. But what we've replaced that with is content and keynotes and workshops. So it is kind of like an amalgamation of a lot of elements that a lot of events, you know, have that we think are, you know, valuable to people, that we've heard are valuable to people. And so we have integrated those into the agenda. But yeah, it's funny. We have gotten rid of like that. I mean, I don't know. What did you think of like the outdoor activities as an element of like networking, I guess?
So it was twofold. I mean, they were fun. They definitely were something to look forward to for sure. I do think there was some, it depended on who went to what event. If you were a buyer that was at an event with a supplier, you already had that meeting, you were able to really dig deep into it, right? Even at those meetings, right, depending on how many people are there, right, with from the buyer side, right? If there's two, or is there three? That corporate structure is still there. And so do you always say what's on your mind? Maybe, maybe not, depending on how close the team is. And then the same thing, how close is the supplier with their team? Do they get along? Are there things that they don't want to say? So that way, I don't know. It still has that a little bit of that element where it's just not a 100% free flow conversation because you're there to still do business. And then what some of those events did allow to happen is more of that free flow conversation. You get a one-on-one potentially, but I could see why you would move to, you know, a keynote or something where they can get some information. I could see both ways, especially as long as you're having the dinners. And again, there was obviously a shit ton of connections done at those meals because you can sit down in a casual manner with whomever, right? Somebody may pull up and be like, oh, I want to go talk to so-and-so. Or, hey, let me introduce you to so-and-so. Even if it wasn't one of your meetings, you were able to go talk to somebody else. And you're like, maybe this was a fit and we didn't get to it this year, but let's continue to talk. So there was still some connectivity there at those dinners. So it was always something fun to look forward to, but I could see why you wouldn't want it at your event. Because again, there's a lot of planning around that, logistics, getting people to places, getting them back, and it could take away from the event.
Yeah. And we found that, you know, of course, the chefs are working very, very hard. So like if they feel behind, they're not going to go on it. So they couldn't be fully included all the time. So we kind of built it into like people, we encourage people to come early, a day early to come, you know, get settled, but then get out there into the outdoors or do an activity together. So it's still there in an element, but yeah, that you kind of hit it on the head there. It's interesting. I mean, kind of bringing up, you know, there's like the party at like the after party aspects at NRA and things like that. It's wild what does get done at like a late night. Like I potentially was at Portillo's eating a hot dog and Italian beef in NRA Chicago, but you know, some good business did end up actually coming out of that, oddly enough, and beyond just like, it's pretty odd. This NRA show for me, not to like pivot too much, was actually a vastly different experience than my first NRA show, which was last year. And I don't know what it was, more of, I guess, not having as much of a plan or not being too worried about having to hit every single booth and talk to every new stranger. Maybe it's because our business was more getting off the ground last year and actually kind of dependent on us pulling, you know, ROI from the event, meeting new people. So maybe it took the fun out of it. But this year we were able to actually, you know, pick new people we wanted to meet, but then make sure we saw the like all of our old friends as well. And then just like actually enjoy Chicago a little bit more and enjoy like, you know, all the different great parties that everyone was throwing.
So Cass, I want to bring you in. NRA, what were your takeaways? You know, Ethan said it just felt different from last year, especially with a different agenda. You know, what was your feel? How was the show for you overall?
Yeah, I mean, I think the strongest thing going for NRA, at least in my opinion, having never, you know, worked a booth myself, I think it's having the majority of the industry there together in Chicago together. So it's not necessarily at the show, as I know you guys were talking about a minute ago. It's all of the parties and things around it that to me is like, just get to see so many people that maybe I haven't seen in a little while, or it's nice to see them in person, even if we're on the phone all the time. So whatever the case may be, like just having everybody there together, I think is what, you know, NRA is best at. And then, you know, to me, the show itself is almost secondary.
That's a good way to put it. What did you guys see as far as trends, getting to walk around, things that are up and coming along those lines?
Well, I mean, I probably had similar answers to you, but you know, I don't think I really saw anything that's too far out, you know, on the cutting edge as what I feel like it was 5 years ago. You know, there were still robots, you know, making stuff. There's still, you know, a lot of plant-based, but there's a lot less like meat analogs than we saw 5 years ago, that kind of thing. And that's one thing that we're hearing from operators as well, is, you know, kind of getting back to the basics a little bit. And I think really overall, the show probably mirrored that.
Yeah, the kind of better for you that was interesting were like, you know, in the past, it was kind of those like plant-based meats, but I'm seeing more just like the clean label, the anti-seed oils, just more of like kind of in that, the health, I mean, obviously, you know, protein, beverage, these have been like the kind of words we keep hearing as like the, what is the new hot thing? But yeah, that was probably the biggest one that stood out, was truly seeing that kind of better for you more so at the NRA. We're looking less at the food. For what we're looking for at the show is like focusing more on like who's where and who's who versus what are they serving almost. I mean, it's definitely interesting.
But how do you determine what booths to stop at, what your targets are, the people that are going to be there that would make those type of decisions to want to do an event? How do you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, one thing we look at is kind of some opportunities within our sort of supplier base. So for instance, we really had a need to add some more protein partners. So that was one of the things that we were looking at, different booths for those protein partners. And then there's a lot of LinkedIn, you know, checking to see what the person's name is that you might need to talk to. But I think from what ties into what Ethan said earlier, we're really fortunate at this point to have a network that's willing to connect us with people. So the best way to talk to somebody at the show is for us anyway, is not just to walk up and say, hey, let me tell you about this event that we do. It's walking over with, you know, somebody that already works with us, and they're introducing us and saying, you got to listen, hear these guys out, you know? So I think that's been just a load off, really, because it's a lot higher conversion rate when you have something like that versus trying to get that elevator pitch out.
And I mean, this year has been, I mean, definitely a lot easier. We had our first event last year when we were at NRA. We had no use case, no proof of concept. It was all just like, trust us. So that's where leaning on those relationships was paramount. That's all we had, essentially. And then this year, having that proof of concept made it a lot more engaging and a lot easier also just to speak to it, because, you know, you're speaking from experience versus kind of like a hypothetical of what we believe we're trying to create. And so that was powerful there too. And the one thing like that I came out of the show too thinking was, initially when I started this, I thought I wanted it to be like the anti-trade show. Like, I was like, we're going to change the industry. It's burned trade shows down to the ground. But I've completely changed that now, because it's more of like, it is an ecosystem. And that, what Cass said about, you will not find another time where you have more people in one place that you can meet with. And that's powerful. And I love NRA, what they've done for that, to bring that together. And so adding Taste In as into the ecosystem as an event that really is another opportunity to bring people together. Whereas NRA, you know, you have that volume. We're trying to make, like, then distill that down to something smaller, something slower, where you can really kind of, you know, take the next step on these conversations that restaurants and suppliers are trying to have. But yeah, it's changing my viewpoint big time on that. Of, it's not an us or them type of thing. There's a purpose that each show serves, or each like event or experience has, that I think is powerful.
I could definitely agree with that. Where did Tong Talks come from?
You know, we gotta give that one to our friend Hannah Lopez for.
Well, that was Hannah.
Hannah broke out at our event. She just kind of like, she just slapped a mic on a tong and just started going for it. And I was like, all right, we're doing Taste Tong Talks from now on. And you know, she's just such a quick, creative person and not afraid to, you know, go ask anybody anything. So she was like, we're doing Tong Talks at NRA. You're going to walk with me. All right. And so going back, I will say I did come up with the question of what culinary utensil you're going to, if you had to replace your arms with.
I saw the video.
I would take that one. I mean, that's something that at Taste we're trying to have some sort of refreshing, you know, way that we get in front of our customers. There's way bigger thought leaders out there as far as like, what are the right ways to market? What are the right ways, you know, what are the trends you need to know so we can like help you? But like, we're trying to just be like a relationship based, people first work. You want to work with people that you enjoy being around, or at least, I mean, I feel like it's a different way of marketing, of just trying to actually, I don't know, take a casual, indirect approach like that. Nobody really learned anything necessarily from the fact that Michael Flathers would use a knife and a tong. But at the same time, I feel like it's actually, I don't know, it's kind of what people want to hear versus him saying what was the most innovative thing you found at the show. Because I don't know, everyone's there's a place for all that. But
we don't need everybody to be so serious all the time.
Yes.
That's what I think between you two, knowing who you guys are, is that comedy, longevity, like, it's not so deep and serious. When, you know, you guys are around, it's just like, all right, we can have a good conversation. We can have fun. Not everything is so damn serious all the time. And we could still do business while having fun.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we don't want it to be just like, yeah, I mean, I guess I would like it to be all about having fun, honestly. But the industry itself and the people in it it draws that type of people. People are generally, from the sales to the culinary to the marketing, they are generally like fun people I've found in the food industry. So the way we want to engage with people is, one, it's just like the only way I feel like we really know how to do it. But then also, I don't know, what a lot of people are looking for and joy. So yeah,
No, I was going to say, you guys say good people, good times, good business. How do you protect that philosophy as you grow?
Okay, I think part of it is not growing too big. We want the experience, we want each event to be special. I think that's part of it. I think, you know, that's something that we have to figure out for ourselves is, you know, as great as it is that Ethan and I kind of, you know, are the brand, so to speak, we have to be really smart about how we scale ourselves and our personalities. So yeah, it's something that we'll have to kind of work through, I think, as we go. But I think to start with, the one thing that we're definitely sold on is, you know, not growing to the point where we have suppliers and operators kind of cycling through our events every 3 months or something like that, where it kind of feels like, you know, it might not be as special as one of the first ones they went to or something like that.
And then how do you make it different enough each time that if a repeat comes back, what's the process with that? Is it, okay, we got two events a year now, or is it, you know, hey, we really think this buyer would be good to come back because they didn't get to see people, so let's do it in a year? Or what's on the horizon for the constant change, or what are you thinking about to keep things fresh because, so they don't get stagnant?
Yeah, I think you really nailed it. And as far as people, so you don't want to come back as an operator, you know, you wouldn't want to come back and see the same manufacturers that you saw, you know, 8 months or a year ago or whatever it might be. So, and then vice versa as well. So I think right now how we're focused is we want to cycle through the chain operators probably once every couple of years or so. But that way it's been some time. So even if they see some of the same manufacturers 2 years later, there's new things to talk about. Maybe they have some new products they're offering. You're obviously working on new you know, menus and things like that. So that's the way we're approaching it right now.
And I will say integrating that content portion and the workshop portion, I think will be keep things engaging because it is a small group. We've partnered with Data Central, so they have keynotes. So there's always new and interesting trends that they can learn and, like, especially marketing, but also culinary, dig their teeth into at the event each time, that then of course can play into the meeting conversations and that they can take away with to their teams. But then on the workshop side, we've dedicated it so operators have a workshop just operators, suppliers have a workshop that is just suppliers. So it's dedicated time for each of those people to, you know, maybe even let their guard down a little bit and just talk operator to operator versus, you know, having that kind of potentially, you know, sales conversation maybe. And having that workshop where we're going to tweak what we're focusing on every couple years will be important. Like this year, we're focusing on complex cross-functional teams for the operators. So we brought in someone that focuses on developing and optimizing large, complex cross-functional teams. And especially now we're seeing, you know, the marketing department and supply chain and culinary, you know, being they're the gatekeepers to something getting on the menu. It's a mix. It's different at each restaurant, but for the most part, you see that it takes buy-in from all of those people. So making sure they're all there in the room, and then also helping them figure out ways to improve because it's difficult. So I think the operators found that they thought they were going to be kind of maybe talking food, but then they were kind of really talking, how do we operationally function as a team and become better altogether? As the whole industry is moving faster, you need to complete projects quicker. The supply chain is getting way more challenging. How do we all support each other? And, you know, in a way,
kind of best practices between everyone so they could share what's working. Because at the end of the day, we all want to see each other succeed in this industry.
Yeah. And just getting rid of those, helping lower those friction points between those departments, you know, like, culinary loves a concept, but then, you know, supply chain has to be the bad guy because it's too expensive. It's like having these conversations earlier, being more transparent with each other earlier, making sure that, you know, you can nix a project before it gets too far down the line and wasting people's time. There's a lot that goes into it, but that was one element. I guess it's kind of got off subject a little bit, but that's a way that we're trying to bring with these workshops where these teams on both the supplier and operator side are going to be like learning more and have a little even personal development growth in addition to professional, in addition to also hopefully helping their teams and their greater companies that they're working for too. So I think that'll be a draw to keep things interesting as you keep coming back to taste.
for someone in the industry who's standing at a crossroads, maybe they're wondering, you know, do they start something? Do they leave something? Bet on a relationship they believe in? What's the thing you know now that you wish someone had told you earlier?
I mean, I guess I would say if it makes you nervous, you should give it more. If it makes you nervous, you should put more weight into that decision and give it more of a shot. Because a lot of times I would let like kind of just fear of failure or fear of the unknown or change dictate how I'm going to make a decision moving forward, whether it's starting a company or, you know, trying to try something new personally, whatever. But I think the more it makes you nervous, the more you should go for it and potentially take that risk. And that's what I would say. Anybody at a crossroads, I would say take that risk, but it's also, I'm right there with you. I understand it is scary, but I think that's almost a better reason to do it. You'll, when the stakes are higher, I think getting out of your head about what if it doesn't work, it's just more of what if it does.
Exactly. So, the times, you know, is a good indicator is when you start to sweat a lot, you know, that it's like, you know what, maybe I should lean into this because it's going to be awkward, uncomfortable. Yeah. I don't know what to do, or people are going to think I'm silly doing whatever it is. But at the end of the day, they care about themselves. They're going to look at the moment and they're going to move on to whatever it is. And to your point, some of those best conversations came out of being uncomfortable and not knowing what was going to come of it. And again, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but at least you gave it a shot and you can keep moving forward. That's a really good, really good piece of advice.
Completely. And yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm not telling everybody that, like, you know, it's not like you need to go out and start your business. You don't need to grind and do this thing because, like, I loved all the experience that I've had. Every job that I've had has been, you know, I've actually, from even before I got into the food industry, my worst jobs, I look back and I've learned the most from them. And so I guess that's another point of, like, I guess when it is bad, try to pull the best possible learnings from it. And you won't know that until a couple years later or a long time after. It's always in retrospect in the moment, you know.
Yeah.
You gotta take care of yourself, but it's just interesting thinking back to those. But yeah. The other fun thing, I mean, I guess tying into the food industry, like why I love it and why I got stuck in it, beyond just like my general love of food, you know, I love being able to tie it into almost every aspect of my life. Of course, when I like to travel, when I like to with friends, food is always a centerpiece of at least activities around that. My friend and I, we started a tin fish review account called Tinnies with the Boys. And this is a shameless plug, but it is also like, it's not very professional. We don't really know much about the fish at all. And we just review them in fun places and really enjoy it. Having this, like starting this business, being able to be in the food industry and integrate all these like elements of food throughout my life and like in my free time. I mean, that's what's definitely kept me going and kept me happy too. But yeah, check out Tinnies with the Boys. You might like it.
No, I saw you posted one thing, I think, on LinkedIn. Yeah, anytime you put something on LinkedIn, I see it because I watch what you guys do. So
yeah.
I think you did an episode and I was like, this is pretty good stuff.
A lot of them, they are not LinkedIn friendly. I'll tell you what. Mainly because my partner in crime on it. Just because.
Is it? Okay. So is it more YouTube or more Instagram?
It's on TikTok and Instagram.
Oh, TikTok and Instagram. Okay.
I've never even been on TikTok.
It's in my show notes to ask a question about it. And what was it about? Let's see.
I just dropped in Tinnies with the Boys.
Yeah.
It was funny though, because there was a new supplier we wanted to meet with.
Yeah.
They did a beautiful rebrand recently, but my in to go talk to their marketing person, like instead of just saying like, hey, I do this event, I was like, any chance I can try your sardines? I do a sardine review on TikTok with my friend called Tinnies with the Boys. And she's like, you know what? Honestly, nobody wants to eat the sardines on the show floor, so you can go for it. I did realize after I ate sardines that I'm like, I need to go like wash my hands and like not go meet new people after eating tinned fish. But
yeah, I'm sure.
It was a fun in though to chat with them. And then of course, she's like, so what do you guys, is this what you do full time? I'm like, funny enough, not actually so.
Well, that's how the conversation start. That's how shit actually happens, is some random conversation or you see something, you make a comment, just something out of the norm because you're like, you may be looking at them, but you're not. You know what I mean? You're like, well, shit, if nothing happens, like, whatever. I had so many of those people. I'd look something, I'd be like, oh, yeah, so-and-so. And they'd be like, oh, and we'd have a conversation. And what do you do? And it's just, you have that, and you're like, well, maybe this will lead to something. Maybe it won't. Who knows? Yeah.
And the interest, I mean, I just was thinking about this morning, like, in the CPG world, like branding is so important and personality in a brand is very important. But in food service, it really is such a relationship-based industry. Mm-hmm. And it's very tight-knit. And so that's what I found that we've been trying to integrate into our brand is like it is just purely trying to be like honest personality, like kind of more raw personality. And that's where I think a lot of brands are winning too, is creating that personality of something that a community that you want to be a part of that you, you know, vibe with essentially. And I'm seeing that like kind of, because there's a bunch of beautiful branding out there. It's less and less difficult to make a beautiful brand, but it is difficult to have every element of the product being good and then the culture around it.
Or you build a culture like Liquid Death. Right. It's water.
Yeah.
But there,
it's water.
The culture, the marketing that they put behind it led to the sales of freaking canned water, for Christ's right. sake. I mean, obviously now they've branched out and done all sorts of shit, but I mean, with them going on the leap, again, that's like one of the hardest markets to break into, bottled water, and they just completely disrupted it, and they're killing it. And I would ask Cass the exact same question, and in true fashion, we lost him due to Wi-Fi cellular connection issues. So, Ethan, you're going to take it home for us. What's the next event coming up, and then hit us with the socials.
Perfect. So the next event is in Suncadia Resort in October 4th through the 6th. So we're going to be up in the mountains, and we're really excited about that. And that'll be another national account event. And as far as socials go, you can follow us at The Taste Events or Taste Events on LinkedIn. We are also on Instagram now, doing Tong Talks and things like that if you're interested in following us there. But for the most part, mainly just LinkedIn. So feel free to check out. We just got a new website. We're loving it, but really appreciate you having us on there. And thanks for letting us talk shop with you. It's always fun.
Yes, it's great seeing you guys, and I will put everything in the show notes, the event coming up, all that good stuff, and again, where to reach them if you are interested in being a supplier or a potential operator. These events are really, really good. There's a lot of cool business that gets done at these, so we'll put all that in good fashion. Until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.